So Brandi Chastain, when I was growing up, I had Van Halen and Lynyrd Skynyrd on my walls. And when my daughters were growing up, they had you and Mia Hamm and Julie Foudy all over their walls. So it's very cool to be talking to you.
We may have had similar haircuts.
I think so, yes. Hey, well, so did you ever have a mullet?
Oh, I mean, I had some sweet, I call them the schlong haircut, yeah, the short long, the feathered Farrah Fawcett. I had all that stuff, the Dorothy Hamill. The list goes on and on.
No regrets. It was the time and it was the place, so it was all good. you were in Moscow for the World Cup. How was that?
It was a wonderful experience. You know, I think there's one thing to listen to the news and to read books about places and people, and to actually be able to go and see it for yourself. It was very eye opening, and they were great hosts. You know, I stayed right at the Red Square, and just seeing, you know, where history has been, unfortunately or fortunately, made at times in the Kremlin, and going to Gorky Park. It was quite lovely, and the weather was absolutely phenomenal. And of course, the World Cup final was exciting. So I had a terrific trip.
I was going to ask you about your workout, your current workout regimen, and you started before we rolled tape that you just had both knees operated on. So I'm going to scratch that part of the interview out, except for how are you feeling and what all went on?
Well, you know, I've been running on these tires for a long time, and you know, like everybody with their cars, you know, you have 50,000 miles of wear and tear on your car. You take it in for an overhaul, and you know, I've been running on my leg for, you know, gosh, ever since I was a little girl. So, you know, I've had quite a few surgeries previous to these, and it was just time to get some things cleaned up and looked at. And so I'm not quite a week out, but I feel like I'm at least headed in the right direction. So my workouts are, I start rehab tonight, and my workouts have consisted of getting up from the couch and going to the restroom.
Woo-hoo!
And to the kitchen. So I'm almost to full marathon potential.
Well, I can only imagine, but I need it in your words. What kind of a patient are you? Are you lying on the couch like you are supposed to, or are you, when they say start doing things in 6 weeks, do you, you know, take it as 6 days or 6 hours? Do you behave yourself?
Yeah, you know what? I think my experience and my age have helped me become a really good patient. I feel like I'm a good patient. I listen to the doctors. I listen to the therapists. But I think more importantly, as I do when I'm coaching my young players or my high school boys or my collegiate women at Santa Clara, you know, I'm constantly trying to help them have a better relationship with their own body and to be able to listen to what it's saying. And, you know, when it says something, it means it. You know, your body doesn't lie to you. So if you're feeling bad, you probably should listen. If you're feeling good, you probably should listen. And so, you know, I think I feel like I have a good relationship now that I've had these, you know, multiple surgeries in the past. So I feel I can make good, informed decisions when I do listen.
And are they expecting a full recovery? You're going to be good, you think?
You know, full is a
relative.
It's a relative word. Yeah. I think that what the doctor said is, I'd like to make you 50% better. Hmm. And I thought, man, I'd take 50% better. So
okay.
If 50% better is full recovery, then I'm going to be very happy.
That's awesome. You mentioned Santa Clara University. I went to school, I think from junior high through high school, with a guy named Jerry Smith. And he and a couple guys, Dave Brennan, Mike Arya, there was a handful who were so, so into soccer, in my opinion, long before soccer was hip. I mean, Jerry Smith, who ended up being your husband and coaching at Santa Clara, was so ahead of the curve with his passion for soccer. And now the two of you are both involved at Santa Clara, right?
That's right. He's been the head coach there now for, this will be his 32nd season.
We're aging ourselves right there. Thanks, Brandi.
Sorry about that. Well, I only say that because I think it's quite remarkable. You know, when you think about when you talk about passion or being ahead of the curve, or, you know, finding something that you really enjoy, to be able to sustain that and to really turn it into a career. I mean, what you're saying is 32 years ago, when he started as the head coach. And then if you think back like 15 years before that even, you know, he was just starting to find soccer for the first time.
Yep.
And there was no way that that was going to be a career. And what he's done has been nothing short of, I think, remarkable. And every year we have a team that has the potential for winning a national championship. I think he's probably the best kept homegrown coach, you know, secret in this country.
Yeah, and it's nice to every once in a while read about him, like the winningest coach in women's soccer, collegiate soccer. You know, you do hear every once in a while about Santa Clara and the women that come out of there, and it's like, oh, that's my hometown, and I know that guy, and,
yeah.
You know, that's very cool. So you started playing long before Santa Clara. You were at Cal. You started playing much, much younger. When did you know, and we're going way, way back because, you know, kids start so young, when did you know that this was something magical? I've seen you call it a beautiful sport, a beautiful game, and I love that. When in your young mind was this something beyond just something you were going to do when that season came around?
Well, you know, I'd love to be able to say, boy, when I was, you know, 8 years old, I knew I was going to be a professional soccer player, or that soccer would be the thing that I was going to do as my career. But because it didn't exist in any way, shape, or form, I didn't see that. I honestly thought I was going to play in the NFL because I watched football with my dad on television, and I enjoyed playing it in the street with the neighborhood kids, and I played when I was in sixth grade at, you know, flag football for my school team. And I honestly thought, I think I'd like to play football.
NFL, no less, not just football, NFL.
And I didn't realize, you know, honestly, when I was watching, I didn't realize that there was no women. I mean, everybody had helmets on, and so they were just football players. And I think that perspective kind of stuck with me in terms of, you know, these are, you know, it's not men soccer players, they're soccer players. You know, they're not women soccer players, mm-hmm. they're soccer players. And I think the first time I really consciously thought about, you know, I want to do that was in 1980 when the men's hockey team beat Russia in the semifinals and then went on to win the gold medal. And Michael Ruzzioni stepped up onto the podium to receive the gold medal, and he had the American flag around his shoulders. And I've luckily had the opportunity to meet Mike, and I've known him now for many years, and I've told him that, you know, I when he did that, when he raised the flag and then he encouraged his teammates to come to the top of the podium, I remember saying, I want to do that. And I didn't really know what do that meant, but something, you know, that American spirit, that team, that, you know, winning, you know, pushing yourself against all odds. And I think that was really the first time, and I was 11. And so I don't think it was soccer at that time. I thought that greatness that was shown by those college kids, non-professional, you know, amateur hockey players was just so inspiring. I thought, wow, that's pretty amazing. And then, you know, soccer started to take off a little bit. You know, we had the North American Soccer League with San Jose Earthquakes being in the back in our backyard here, and my parents recognized that I did love soccer so much, and so they got season tickets, and we became, you know, regular tailgaters, and we went to all the games with our friends and our, you know, families, and became part of what we did. And I think that, you know, that started to I became enamored by a gentleman by the name of George Best when he came to the San Jose Earthquakes, and he was probably, at the time, maybe one of the best, if not the best player in the world, and he had played for Manchester United, and I just watched him play soccer like it was so effortless and with a smile on his face, and I thought, okay, this is it. This is it. And that's, I think, you know, when I really thought, maybe soccer is going to stick with me for a long time.
You're very modest because some would argue that you single-handedly made women's soccer popular, but I'm sure I've heard you speak and I've seen your writing that it took a team. But, you know, 1999, the whole country of little girls for the first time had this team that the whole world was watching, and it was women. And then there was this PK, and we beat China in overtime, and the they would show the bleachers and it was full of girls. And we were glued to our TV, and my husband coached soccer, and it was such a pivotal point for little girls across the country and the world. And I hope you own and have pride in that, because I think you're a pretty modest person from what I've read. But it was from when you wanted to play soccer and it didn't exist to look at us, world.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I have to always start the conversation or answer the question with, I mean, soccer is absolutely a team sport, and I think that's why I did fall in love with it. You know, it was a place where I could get dirty and be sweaty and, you know, be physical, take a lot of risks and fall down and get back up and make a lot of more mistakes. And the journey to that 1999 for all of us was, I think, fairly similar in that, you know, there was a huge population that didn't really believe what was happening,
right.
And didn't really pay attention to what was happening. And women's soccer was quite anonymous. And so even though we had one World Cup that we won in 91, and then the U.S. team won third place in 95, and then we played in the first ever Olympics in 96. And I think that Olympic gold medal in Atlanta was kind of this, for the general Joe public, because that was such a pivotal moment for women in sports, because it seemed that every U.S. women's team were winning gold, and actually in individuals as well. So, you know, it was softball, basketball, gymnastics, soccer, track and field. I mean, it was just, the list goes on and on. And it was kind of an eye-opening moment for it. I think maybe like the one I had in 1980 for people who just love sports and love American sports. And so I think that was a real nice springboard for 99. And the fact that we had a woman in charge by the name of Marla Messing, who was the president of the World Cup Committee, who, you know, Marla Messing is not a very imposing physical person, but she absolutely is you could call her a shark or a whale or whatever. She just is just humongous and decided that this was going to be a massive tournament on the biggest scale from east to west coast, north to south, in all the biggest stadiums we had, and not hidden up in some collegiate stadiums in the northeast of the United States. And so by doing that, I think she propelled she's really the impetus for all of this, and that allowed more people to see and witness what was happening. And then, you know, when we got to that moment versus China, so many people got to be exposed to what was happening. So I really think it starts with, you know, obviously all of us as young girls loving soccer, but then Marla Messing taking the leap of faith and all of us saying, all right, we're in, you know, 2 feet, let's do it, and believing in it, and then embracing the opportunity to, you know, I always tell this as a funny story, you know, like the future of women's soccer is hanging in the balance, because every media outlet was saying, if the U.S. women's team doesn't win, then there will be no future of women's soccer. This is it. You know, we'll all forget. And so, you know, luckily we were working with a sports psychologist, Dr. Colleen Hacker, who, you know, helped us recognize, you know, here's some things that you need to let into the filter and some things you have to keep on the outside. And, you know, I think we did a fairly good job of trying to keep that pressure on the outside while, you know, moderating our own, you know, pressure that we put on ourselves as competitors. So it was just a wonderful time with wonderful people at the right moment, and the audiences were ready for it, and I don't think it could have turned out any better.
There's a quote here from you: the spirit of the team, the way we went out and played each and every game, how we included the public to be part of the team, it was amazing. I love that you have given it and paid it forward from the time that you were a public figure. Tell me about Bossy, spelled B-A-W-S-I, and I love that it's pronounced Bossy as in bossy little girls, and as though that's a bad thing, right? As though that's a bad thing.
It is a bad thing in the best
place. Right?
You know, we are bad as...
We're bossy.
Yeah, we're bossy. So, Bossy... the beginning of Bossy was basically the ending of the the WUSA, which was a very sad, unfortunate situation when our first ever professional women's league folded. And, you know, I've learned through my life, through lots of different obstacles and, you know, births and deaths and divorces and ups, losses and wins, that, you know, there's always something good that can happen, no matter the circumstance. And so when, in 2003, when the league folded, our general manager, Marlene Bjornsrud, who happened to also be, prior to that, one of our associate athletic directors at Santa Clara, and had been in women's sports for a long time in tennis, you know, she and Julie Foudy and I, we've got to do something. Like, this can't be the end, you know. There's so many women doing so many good things in sports, and we don't make the headlines, and we don't get the attention and maybe even the respect or the validity that we deserve, but we're doing good things, and we're making a difference in people's lives. We can't stop. What can we do, even though the league is folded? And we kind of, you know, scratched our head a little bit. We threw some ideas out. We looked around our community and we said, we've got a crisis. And the crisis is that in underserved populations, young girls and women are, the level of diabetes and obesity is pretty high. And can we do something about that? You know, we're movers. We like to get out there and move. You know, what kind of environment can we create that we can maybe tackle this issue for this population? And so we set out to create an organization. And when we were doing this, we, you know, now at the same time, we're thinking of, okay, what should we call ourselves? Mm-hmm. And we came up with the Women's Sports Initiative because we were women in sports, and we had an initiative to help, you know, this population and to make a difference. And so someone said, okay, well, that's a nice name, but, you know, it doesn't really tell where you're from. And people like to hear where, you know, be a part of something because it impacts them. It's from their community. It, you know, they feel good about participating. And I said, okay, well, we don't want to, we're not really San Jose and, you know, we're not really Santa Clara or whatever it is. We're kind of the Bay Area. Right. We want to be the Bay Area. And so we'll be the Bay Area Women's Sports Initiative. And so immediately we put that out there to, you know, friends and people who we admire, like, hey, what do you think about this? And we got a phone call back, and they're like, oh, this is the most perfect name for something new Brandon and Julie would do. And we're like, okay, that's great. Like, you know, what the heck does that mean? And they're like, you know, Bay Area Women's Sports Initiative, the acronym, you'll pronounce, you know, that's bossy. And Marlene was like, oh, no, we have to change that. And Julie and I were like, oh, no, we are going to be so bossy. We're going to get our bossy selves out there, and we're going to make a lot of change. So, you know, I think there was a time when Sheryl Sandberg came out, you know, when she was writing her book about leaning in, about, you know, bossy and how that's a negative word. And we're trying to change the connotation of bossy. You know,
good.
We tell our girls we're bossy, we're in charge of ourselves. We're in charge of our own voice and our health and our wellness and who we want to be. And we can be the boss of ourselves. And so we started with 11 girls at the high school age, actually. And the NCAA came around and said, oh, no, you can't do that because you're using collegiate female women, student athletes to be role models and mentors. And that's a recruiting violation. And we're like, oh, my gosh, have you seen our girls? They've never done athletics once in their life. But we said, okay, you know, maybe that's a good thing. We actually evaluated ourselves and said, you know, we need to start younger because when girls start making their own decision about who they are is probably in this, you know, second, third, fourth grade. Yeah. And that's when we need to get to them and tell them how awesome they are. And so we changed course and we started down a different path. And again, we started with those 11 girls, and now we're over 17,000 young girls who have been mentored by Santa Clara, Stanford, San Jose State, West Valley, De Anza, Menlo College, and countless junior colleges and high schools in the Bay Area who have come to playgrounds to influence the lives and the health and the wellness of young girls in our community, and it's been amazing.
That is awesome. That is just so cool. Talk to me about deciding to donate your brain to science to research head injuries, because that's pretty awesome.
Well, you know, we all have, we all have something out there that's going to be the legacy. You know, everybody always uses this word, you know, what's your legacy?
Mm-hmm.
And I think after 99, that word started getting thrown around. Oh, the legacy of the 1999 team is that you changed the landscape for young women soccer players, and more girls started playing soccer. And that's great. You know, that is obviously, mm-hmm. we're, you know, as a collective group, we're extremely happy about that. And we're grateful that young girls have had an opportunity to put on cleats and run around fields and, you know, get dirty and be awesome. But I started thinking, like, do I really want my legacy to be that I scored one specific goal in one particular game, or can it be more? And I started thinking this because I was working at Santa Clara University on a board of the Institute of Sports Law and Ethics, and every year we were giving out our ethos award to individuals or groups who were making a real difference in ethics and ethical situations and making a stand for either a particular group or against a bylaw or something that was going to really make an impact. And it just so happened that we were giving our ethos award to Chris Nowinski and Dr. Bob Cantu for the Concussion Legacy Institute. And we were, you know, in the work that they were doing against the NFL for football players and for young people and, you know, trying to bring awareness to an environment that was obviously, as we know now, and the NFL has readily finally admitted that, you know, it's dangerous.
Mm-hmm.
That concussions are here and we can't pretend like they're not and we have to do something about it and protect our players. And so I was really drawn into the story. And then once we gave the award, it was a couple weeks later, we were having our regular board meeting, and our chair said, you know, what are we going to do next? Anybody have any ideas for what, you know, what will our focus be? And I, without really spending too much time, I raised my hand and I said, I'd like to raise the age of heading the ball in soccer and take it out of the lower ages. And he said, okay, we're in. And I was like, oh, my gosh, what did I just do? And so began the journey of working with Chris Nowinski and Dr. Bob Cantu. And when they created the brain bank, where they could, you know, obviously you can't research people's brains while they're using them as well as you can when they're not.
Right.
You know, I said... Yes, I said I would donate my brain because that if I could help soccer in the long run be safer, that would be a wonderful legacy to leave.
That's awesome.
And so
yeah, that's a legacy.
You know, and I'm hoping with the work that they're doing now that things have already changed. We actually got the age up to 11. You know, we're hoping that we can maybe inject a little bit more awareness and get that age up a little bit higher to maybe just right before high school, where the body's a little bit more musculature developed and mature, and young kids' experiences on the field can be more about the skills on the ground than when the ball's in the air.
Yeah,
and
that's
so, you know, that's still going.
That's a legacy to be very, very proud of. Have to ask you about the other legacy because I have you on the phone. I was reading that the bra was on display and then it went away and now you have it somewhere in your house, the bra.
Yeah. Yes. You know, the bra has been many places. And I loaned it to a museum in New York. I think it was called the American Museum. It's like, you know, all American sports moments and things, memorabilia. And unfortunately, the museum didn't last, but all the items got put into, like, storage bins and sent to New Jersey. And you know what happens in New Jersey?
What?
Things may disappear.
Oh,
you know?
As it were.
Things can disappear over there. And so it took a long time, years. In fact, to get it back. And I got it back just before the 10th anniversary.
No kidding.
So I, Yeah, until I said, well, you know what? I think the bra has done enough traveling. So
the sisterhood of the traveling bra.
We'll retire it to a frame and, keep it safe.
Well, this has been, my daughter just texted me, and I texted her going, I'm talking to Brandi Chastain. Can you leave me alone? Oh, my God. I'm on an interview. Go away. So, yeah, tell her I said, okay, I'm not going to tell her you said hi. But anyway.
Tell her I said hello back.
I will. Thank you for what you do. I know that you've continued to stay involved in soccer. You coach your younger son. You work at Santa Clara. You've got Bossy. You continue to give back. Final question, because this is called NorCal Names. You born and raised in San Jose, and you call it home. Why NorCal forever and ever?
You know what? I think we have a community that really appreciates the individual and our own personal uniqueness. And you know, to be honest with you, I don't think that we'd be having this conversation if I didn't grow up in this community. I really had two wonderful parents who supported me and raised me in the community where no was really not an option. My mom was a perfect example of fighting that, and she would always say, find your yes. And she put me in environments where I could be challenged and where I could, again, fall down, get up, make mistakes, do all those things. And, you know, we live in such a, I think in terms of just the geography, we're lucky we have sunshine most of the year. Mm-hmm. We can play outside. And for a young girl who really loved to be physical, it was the perfect place. And, you know, having only one person tell me, hey, you're a girl, this is not really the environment for you. And then having my peers on the male side stand up and say, no, coach, she's really good. They're really good. You need to look at them. And for young boys to stand up for young girls, I knew something special was going on. And so I'm eternally grateful for the community in which I live. And because of that, I give back. I've given back with Bossy, but I'm also coaching young girls with the California Thorns in this new U.S. Soccer Development Academy League. And now I get a chance to give back the things that were so abundantly given to me by coaches and supporters for the last 40 years. So I'm very lucky.
Well, as a woman who has always loved sports and also grew up maybe not being recognized, and as a mother of two daughters who have always loved sports, thank you for what you do. I hope your knees feel good and make it to 50%. Say hey to Jerry and his sister Debbie. And thanks so much for your time. Thanks so much, Brandi.
Hey. You got it. My pleasure. Thank you for all you do and for putting our voices out there.
Good stuff. Take care. Thanks, Brandi.
Take care.
Bye-bye.